Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. And I really should be saying that to myself because I feel like I haven't been on this show in weeks. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana. And with me, as always, he's in this one. Yes, that other box. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
It's good to have you back, Stephen. It's been I've had some fun ones without you, but you know, this it always feels off when you're not around because I feel when it's magical and you're not there. Mm-hmm. It could have been even more magical.
Yeah. So, don't think I didn't contact my lawyers about this to make sure that you weren't trying to usurp me out of my own podcast. Just saying. No,
it's definitely mine. You just have the privilege to work for me on this podcast.
Right.
You're a volunteer. You volunteer.
Right.
That's what we do.
Well, so yes. Do you. we all volunteer, that is for sure. Joining us this week is Neil Jones, the creator of Aerial Knights Never Yield, a 3D runner set in a futuristic Tokyo-style Detroit with a dope-tastic soundtrack. Neil, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. You don't get to say dope-tastic anymore. I'm taking away that from you.
Well, to be 100% fair, Andy wrote that. So
right, because you know, I just go to Steam. I was like, what does Steam say about this game? Cool.
It's dope-tastic.
You just cop two or three lines, throw it in there. You're saying it. The man told you not to.
I'm trying to make the word be meaningless so that I don't want to say it anymore. So if you just keep saying it over and over again, it loses its magic. And not that it had much magic to begin with.
I think it's got plenty of magic. It's a very specific kind of tastic.
Yes. And dope is one of the words that I use very often to describe things in which I cannot find better words. So really? Dope is a top is a top word for me. So this is interesting. This is going to be interesting. Can dope-tastic make it into my vernacular? We'll see. Tune in to episode 60 next week to see if that makes it into. But for those of you that are new here, you are listening to the Dual Screens Podcast, the world's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor, they all have a story to tell, and we would like to be the platform for them to do so. The Dual Screens Podcast posts each and every Friday for your listening pleasure. If you like what you hear here, if you like it, if you like what you hear, listen to our other shows. They're on the same network. You don't have to go anywhere else. On your favorite podcast platform or on youtube.com/DualScreensTV. Subscribe, follow, leave reviews, but most importantly, the most important thing you can do is tell your friends and share all over the internet. If you want to give us some of your hard-earned dollar bills, you could visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, Colton the Apprentice Nestler and FNH Paul. We have all kinds of options for you to explore and support. All right, let's dive right into the show. And ladies and gentlemen, we are debuting a brand new segment called the lead-off question of the show. Andy, take it away.
Wow, you actually gave it a segment and a name and everything.
Don't say I never did anything for you.
Okay? Yeah, you really do. You look out for me sometimes. I really appreciate that. So, Neil, you are an accomplished, multi-disciplined 3D artist, game developer. You've worked on many projects throughout your illustrious career.
Okay.
I have to ask you.
Oh, boy.
Why is No More Heroes the best game of all time?
Oh, that's the easy one. I thought this was going to be a hard question.
No.
No More Heroes is the best game of all time because you can play that game and know exactly who made it. the person who made that game has such a clear style and did not give any craps about anything that you can definitely feel all of his decisions and choices and what he could and couldn't do.
That's not a bad answer, Andy.
And I think a lot like your game, it gives no craps with a very clear visual style that's unique to you. So I think with that, we should dive in.
Yeah,
Steven?
Let's do it. Actually, I want to kind of piggyback off of that. So, obviously, being that's one of your favorite games of all time.
Oh, it's the best.
It's the best game of all time.
According to him, yes.
Best.
Loaded statement.
Do you purposefully take that reasoning for that being the best game? Do you take that and do you apply it to your own development? and your own development style. Like,
like seeing like how he got away with doing certain things, you know, that's clearly unique to his personality and the studio he worked with. His personality, because, you know, just to be clear, Suda51 did not make that game by himself.
Right.
but, you know, he took, you know, this is a Tim Burton concept where, you know, even though Tim Burton had pretty much nothing to do with Nightmare Before Christmas,
right,
his name is on it. So, yeah, I kind of try to guide myself to say, hey, you know, this is normally how the game industry does something or how it normally would be done. How do I want to do it, and how can I make it my own?
So you're saying that there is no Aerial Knight that really that's really involved in this game. It's just a name that you stamped on.
Well, I'm Aerial Knight, but yes. That is accurate.
So let's talk about Aerial Knight. Let's talk about the style and the, I mean, because if there's one thing that pops out at you instantly, it is the style. It is how it's oozing personality. It's it. You look at it and you say, oh, OK, I know what I'm getting into. It kind of reminds me of the very first impressions that you got from some of the best trailers out there, really, when you looked at for example, Cyberpunk. When we first got a look at Cyberpunk and you got into that world. Now, obviously, we're not going to talk about what happened afterward, but the allure of that world is instantaneous. You see it and you instantly have a visceral reaction. Something sparks in your brain and you're instantly attracted to it. Can you talk about how you got to that style for Aerial Knight?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And we can talk about Cyberpunk because that's a really interesting conversation. But as far as the style of my game, it's like my natural art style. I've been doing like 3D art for a really long time. Played a lot of, you know, stylized games. My favorite type of games were always those AA games, those mid-range games that don't really exist too much anymore. Kind of like Sleeping Dogs and No More Heroes and Lollipop Chainsaw. In this game called Wet.
Wet needs a remake, man.
Wet is at least a sequel. Nope, I love that
does,
game.
It does not. Don't.
That, too many people are never going to play that game. If it gets that, exactly. If it gets that remake polish and they're like, hey, check, remember this? And people will be like, what is this? I missed this. Boom. Instant sales. That's right.
Guns
there.
And swords and
some things you don't have to go back to. Like, right. Like those old, what is it? The drive-in movie shows, the ones that look terrible on your TV but was fun at the time. That's what is, you know, it's a nice little game of your past. If you got to play it, cool. If you missed out on it, you know, too bad.
Right, but don't you want to give Eliza Dishku some work? She needs a paycheck.
Eliza.
She'll be all right.
Yeah,
Eliza
she could too. Do a Wet too. Why not?
And the title, I don't think they would get away with that title these days. But
that's why they have to do it. Just piss people off.
You open yourself up to disappointment when they like redo or like make a sequel to a game that's like 20 years old. It's not going to live up to what you remember it to be. That's why, like, even though No More Heroes is my favorite game of all time, I refuse to play that game again.
Well, I was going to ask you, are you excited for No More Heroes 3?
Yeah, I'll play 3. But like going back to 1, I can't go back to 1 because like in my head, I've built it up as this most amazing thing. And like if I go play it and get disappointed, then I just ruin the most amazing game of all time for me.
So this is an interesting tangent because now I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the Final Fantasy VII remake? Is that like, have you not touched that at all? Do you not touch remakes?
No, I do touch remakes.
Okay,
I never played Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, okay, I see.
But I'm going to play that game once it's finished.
Okay. I see what we did here. I see where you're going. So this is a style that you've developed over the years and everything like that. Talk about the gameplay style. Like it's very fast, very frenetic. It's kind of jaw dropping seeing the fluidity of it all. Explain how you got to that.
Oh, thanks, man. The original concept of the game was to take something old and just update it and give it a lot of style and do things in a different way that couldn't have been done, you know, back in the Flash days, you know, when we were playing on Newgrounds. We couldn't do things in full 3D, especially with just one person. We couldn't have cutscenes and like this really dope soundtrack as a part of like something that's really fast paced, that's meant for you to pick up and then put down anytime you want.
Nice.
Why is everything better when you Tokyo-fy it? Because I look at this, you know, it's set in Detroit, but you know, it has a lot of that Akira, Ghost in the Shell, like those kind of like bright neon color vibes going on of it. Why does that work so well in a futuristic setting?
Well, I don't think it's a Tokyo-fication of something. The main reason I, you know, added that kind of aspect to this game was because Black culture itself is really adjacent to that kind of style. You see the old school Black Dynamite movies and stuff like that. We love that kind of stuff, and I wanted to incorporate a lot of my culture into the game, and that includes other people's cultures as well. Without being, you know, rude or disrespectful to
it. Of course.
But as a general art style, it just has a lot of aspects of filling the environment. Because if I made a game in Kansas, it would just be grass and sky, right? In very few cases do people get to experience, you know, top to bottom buildings with all types of signs. And I think it's the clutter that draws people in. You can see it a lot in Cyberpunk. You can walk around that city and there's always something to look at.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of draws people into that. And it's the closest, like, Tokyo, I don't know what you just called it, but bringing that kind of, you know, design aspects right. into it, that's based off of reality. And outside of that, it doesn't really exist anywhere else. Because if you did it to New York, it would just be buildings and dirty streets. If you did it to Detroit, it would be like spread out buildings and dirty streets.
When I was a kid, you know, video games seemed to come from a faraway alien land called Japan. And we always had this image of what Japan was like, because we always felt like they were in the future, that they were so much more sophisticated and everything was more vibrant. Like when people would show you, you know, Dragon Ball Z or Sailor Moon, I'm trying to think of the ones as a kid, Gundam, like they were always these super out there. I've never seen anything like it before. And I think that taking those elements of our imagination and letting us kind of run wild with it by putting it into sort of a familiar setting, like an urban city in the States, kind of marries these two imagination. Like Andy and I grew up in New York City. Like we know what New York City is. We know the vibe. We know it has its own character. My wife is actually from Detroit. So like I've been there several times, and like I've seen it kind of go from the here's where all the houses are boarded up. Here's where nobody works in these buildings, but the buildings are still there, to now seeing it turning around with a vibrant art culture and like all this stuff. And it just seems like every time I go there, it's a brand new world. And I think that what you're doing here is like playing with that imagination of what we could imagine things becoming or being, more so than Detroit become human too, because that seemed to kind of play on the fetishization of where the city can go to, the how poor decisions or what is seen as poor decisions can lead the city into, and then you kind of look at it and you're almost put off by it, whereas this seems more inviting and more fantastical and more open to the imagination to kind of interpret how the world came together in that way.
Yeah, I feel you. Detroit, yeah, it's interesting, to say the least. Like a lot of people don't, especially even Americans, don't know the like whole history of Detroit. But like you said, seeing Detroit come back from it being great before, and you know, the fall and then the rise back up. But yeah, it's interesting.
So kind of walk us through what the core gameplay loop of this is. It looks like a runner of some kind. It's very visual. Parkour kind of like aspects. So what does the typical gameplay loop look like in Never Yield?
Cool. That's a good question. The basics of the gameplay is that people try to make it from the beginning of one level to the end of that level with the least amount of deaths. I expect people to die a lot. But once you, you know, kind of understand how you die, you can definitely get past it pretty easily. It's all about, you know, kind of muscle memory, and a little bit of reaction time. What I found when I was first, you know, doing my prototypes of the game is that, the older the person, the more they, you know, grew frustrated with the game, but the younger the person, the more they liked the game. Because they were more open to making mistakes.
Interesting.
And that, I think that's the biggest thing I learned was, like, the older you get, the less you want to make a mistake. And if you do make a mistake, you get very frustrated very quickly, which I'm cool with. I've told a lot of people that, you know, I'm not making a game for everybody. I'm making a game for, you know, a group of people who like those types of games. I want everybody to play. But I'm definitely catering to a specific group, and that's not a demographic. That's more of a taste-wise.
Right.
Is that why you hate roguelike, Steven? Because you're a grumpy old man and you die too much?
No, I think I've come down to it. I think it's my OCD and my ADD. Mm-hmm. I think they play very. I don't know. I mean, that's a conversation for another time. But I feel like it promotes an anxiety of non-accomplishment when all I want to do is accomplish. Like that's my main reason for playing games, is to accomplish. And when something like that kind of takes that away, like, in, for example, Super Meat Boy, or, you know, Super Meat Boy Forever, like there's a point A and a point B, and you're going to get to point B. No matter how many times you fail, point B is going to happen, and you're going to figure it out. And Celeste was like that too. One of the things I did want to ask is there a deliberate path that you have to take in each one of the levels that you just kind of have to learn what that path is? Or is it more systems that you have to learn? Is it, oh, I could vault over this table, or I could go under this table. I can, you know, avoid an obstacle in multiple ways, like two or three ways? Or how do you play with that so that it doesn't seem like all it is just memorizing the levels?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I do give people options. Like, if it's a table, you can slide under it or you can jump over it, but you can't vault through it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, there's options there. I try to give people the space to, like, especially speedrunners, the space to kind of figure out what moves are the fastest and kind of, like, look at something and just kind of adjust. I don't have a lot of, you know, just standard objects to be like, oh, there's that box again. I have to do this specific move. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of look at the box and the environment around it and say, what's the best way for me to get past this obstacle with people chasing me, or, you know, whatever obstacle, right, whatever, you know, objects I add to that, you know, specific situation. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, what you said about roguelikes. They're not my, you know, favorite. Either for a lot of the same reasons, but even with my feelings towards roguelikes, I still, like, really enjoy playing, you know, my game outside of it being my game, but just because of we have the sense of accomplishment, because once something's done, you know how to do it, you're better at it, and if you played it again, you would probably be a lot faster at it.
Right.
Third option, you stop and you flip the table.
Or you, like, vault over and kick it behind you to slow down your enemies. There you go. Now we figured it out.
Is there any sort of character progression in terms of learning new skills as you play? Are you just at the onset, here's your set of moves that you can do and that will carry you throughout the entire game?
Yeah, gameplay wise, I've always been, like, really into giving players everything at the start. Mm-hmm. Like, here's everything you need to know. The game will twist things sometimes, but basically, you know the controls. There's not much else to learn.
Interesting. Okay.
This kind of reminds me of, like, Mirror's Edge in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, using the environment, using your tools to to traverse the world and trying to get through it as quickly and as stylistically as humanly possible.
Well, it's like a Breath of the Wild, you know, it's like, here's all your toys at the onset and just go apeshit and do what you want to do in this sandbox we've given you.
Yeah. I know a lot of games like try to Metroidvania file stuff. And I try to do things differently, try to go the opposite way just to have people feel like, you know, this isn't the same or more of the same.
So,
go
ahead.
I was just saying that's a lot of genre of that. Like, that's in the market a lot, Metroidvania. You could have done like a runner Metroidvania. That could have been a new idea. Just mash those two genres together.
I'm sure that exists.
Yeah, that's
where you unlock more strive. Isn't that like, or is that what that's called? Anyway, moving on.
All right. So why don't you talk about the story? Tell us what this game is about from a story perspective.
I plead the fifth.
Interesting.
Oh,
okay.
It's okay. That much of a secret.
It's not a secret. when I first came up, like, me personally, I hate overcomplicating stuff. Mm-hmm, I want clean, easy stories. If someone asks me, hey, what happened in the game you just played? I want to just be like, this happened. That's it. but with that, I like there being a lot of lore that can be found if I wanted to look for it, if you know what I'm saying. Like the early days of Destiny, where they was like, hey, everything's dying. You got to stop stuff from not dying. But then, like, with every weapon you picked up, you found out, hey, this belonged to this person, and, you know, who did this and that. Where, you know, people who wanted that could find that. But, you know, I think it's better for people to search and figure that out on their own. If I just tell them what the story is, then that's no fun.
That's very Dark Souls, too. How a lot of the lore is buried in item descriptions that you find throughout the world. And you can search for it and actually go into, like, deep. I've watched like 2 hour plus long videos on the lore of a boss in Dark Souls because the game gives you that much content if you want to find it. But there's still that surface level, basic, simple aspect where it's like, yeah, you have a sense of what's going on and it'll get you by. But I like how you went that extra step to put lore in a game.
So, indies, we have to do it in a different way because I don't have time to sit here and write paragraphs and, you know, do all these hidden things. So I did all of my lore in art. So, like, playing the game and noticing things, that's how you figure out what's going on. There's no dialogue in my game. So everything's done through, you know, the movements of the characters and the cutscenes and stuff like that and subtle hints in the music. I don't actually know if anyone's going to figure out what's going on in this game, but they'll get the basic overall concept of what happened.
Well, that sounds fun though. It's like, you know, the secret and no one else does.
That's an interesting little contest you could have. Whoever could come closest or figure out what the game is actually about. If they get it right, they get a prize.
See, I was thinking about that, but at the same time, if someone comes up with, takes all of the concepts and the hints that I left and comes up with a better story than that is actually in there, I'm just going to like say, yeah, that person's right. I don't want to cheat.
That interpretation is 100% my vision of this game.
Thank you for making me look smarter than I am. Thank you.
A quick side note that reminds me, because I follow like the artist for Silent Hill on Twitter, because I love that series so much, and they always get asked about, are the tears in the wall, do they symbolize like the character's torn psyche? And they're just like, no, it looked cool, but sure, we'll go with that if it sounds better.
the biggest cop out answer that somebody who does that can be, it could be whatever you think it will be, that we left it up to your interpretation.
There's no wrong answer.
There is no wrong answers. It's it, and then you just kind of, yeah, I like the color blue.
though I'd love to be the guy that's like, yeah, that thing you just said to me, that whole like long exposition of what this thing means, you are very, very wrong. 100% rethink your life. And don't play my game anymore.
what I will say about the story, now that we're talking about it, is that for anybody who cares anyway, anything that you think was done out of laziness was intentional.
That's all I got for you. Intentional. Well, every brush stroke of an artist is purposeful, right? Like every time you dip your paintbrush into the paint, every time you touch the canvas, it always has purpose, even if it seems completely meaningless. And I think that's
kind of games.
I think maybe, well, for example, Mario's mustache, right? Mm-hmm. Like you would think that was because he was a plumber and they wanted to give him a mustache, but it wasn't. It was because his face looked weird. So they had to give him a couple extra pixels to separate his nose from his mouth, right? Like that, yeah. It had purpose, but like you're just looking at it, just like, of course he has a mustache. He's, you know, he's a Italian plumber from Brooklyn. But there's something behind you that I feel like takes a lot. There's a poster behind you. I should say this. There's not a murderer behind you.
There's a lot of
there
stuff
is a poster
behind
you from right yeah. There it is. Yeah. And I can't help but be reminded of that. Spider-Man. I believe that's into the Spider-Verse. I can't really tell.
Yeah, it's like one of those limited edition posters.
Yeah. Did that have any influence on your game design? Like the fluidity, the movement, the style?
People made it have influence. Like I was developing this game like before Spider-Verse, or you know, coming up with the concept before Spider-Verse came out. And people seen like the early animations and stuff that I did. And you know, because it's a black guy with, you know, hair and a jacket, everyone was like, oh, it's Spider-Verse. And I can't get away from it. Yeah, and I was like, you can't get away from it. So at some point, I think more recently, I just leaned into it. I was like, sure, okay.
There you go.
It's a good thing to be compared to, so I'm not mad about it.
I mean, there's something beautiful about that. Again, that movement, that fluidity, that, and when you combine that in a game like Miles Morales, this Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales for PS4 and PS5, like just seeing the movement married to whether it's the combat or the web slinging, just how the human body can move in certain ways, can be very poetic, very, very, very beautiful. And that movie, I feel like, stood above and beyond what we thought Spider-Man could really be. In that stylized movement and fluidity. So, and honestly, like I'm not sitting here just like, you know, sticking my head up your ass. Like I really did like that. Like, I don't like runners. I just don't. I don't like platformers. I don't like being judged on my skill. I don't like losing over and over again, but something about this game and just seeing it in motion has me way more intrigued than I think I had any right to be. And that's why I'm focusing so much on that, because it really is I feel like it is the selling point of this video game. It's that, holy shit, look at this thing in movement. Look at it. Look at how this person is moving through this environment. It's almost as if, it's almost like when the original Spider-Man, Marvel Spider-Man trailer came out and we saw him go from web slinging to going through a restaurant. And you saw that single cut and you see his whole body kind of moving in this beautiful, almost like water-like fashion. And like, again, that I was sold from that moment. So that's why I'm saying I'm focusing so much on
that. You kind of like hit the nail on the head, because when I was first coming up with the concept and, you know, the game design of the game, it was based off of this scene in the movie. It's written down. I just can't remember the name of the movie. Where everything was slowed down and this dude was just like running and he was doing all these cool flips and like dodging things. I was like, man, just this scene, if this was like a full game, that would be crazy.
I'm thinking then, like X-Men Quicksilver kind of a thing, maybe.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah. It was that Quicksilver scene where he was like getting stuff out the way. And
like the good soundtrack kicks in. He puts his little goggles on.
Yeah. It was, I saw that. And then I saw Baby Driver, I think. Baby Driver got me in the, hey, music matched with that and making all this stuff work together. Would be really dope. So yeah.
Yeah. So speaking about music, I think you have the art style, the animation is flawless, but then there's this amazing saxophone thing going on too.
Ooh, we got that sax.
Which, oh my God, what a perfect marriage of elements. Like that soundtrack, that really makes this.
I made the face based off the animation, because I do all the animations myself. I do the best I can, but I definitely read the comments.
I read them too. They know what they're talking about.
I'm getting better at it, but it's indie game, so you know, if they don't like it, whatever. But yeah, my friend Dan, I knew Dan since like I think high school or middle school, one of the two. Really long time. We're old now. And yeah, Dan always did music. He went to, you know, game design school with me. I started working on this game. We were doing day jobs and I was like, hey, do you want to try to make a song for this game I'm working on? And it took us about 2 months to get the first song done because everything he gave me, I hated. I was like, this isn't what I'm going for. And I just kept sending him stuff. It was just like overflow of content. I was like, make it more like this, because I knew what I wanted to sound like in my head, but we just couldn't get it down. And then he was over and we were watching Cowboy Bebop or something like that. And he was like, can we do something like that?
You have such good taste. That's what I say.
Thanks. It was like, we need something like that, but with hip hop elements. And then Dan, like, he was kind of just sick of me. He was like, whatever, man. Okay, fine. One more time. So he just stayed up all night and made this one song. And he was like, here. And then like I listened to it. I was like, perfect. Just like that. And we didn't change it ever since. Like, that song's still like the core song we base everything off of.
That's so neat. Yeah, I feel like it just pulls you in to the gameplay so much that like that saxophone aspect of it and just the beats, like, without that, I don't think it would be as fun to play. There's something about that track or just the vibe of it that makes you get into it much more than you think you would.
Yeah, people who don't like jazz, like, you got to ease them into it. Right, so you have to mix it with something else and then blend it into like this hard, like straight jazz, and then pull it back a little bit. So throughout the game, it's like, it's definitely a flow. We start off with something that's unexpected. Then we give you the jazz hip hop that you're expecting. Towards the middle of the game, it's just pretty much straight up jazz. And then at the end, we have like the last song we worked months on, and it's perfect for the end of the game. I hope people really like it because we put so much work into it. We have vocals, different artists on the track. We have jazz, hip hop. And everything's blending with the action on screen. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it takes you back to games like Ape Out, where the idea is fun. You're a gorilla killing people, but it's that percussion soundtrack that kind of guides you along that makes you like want to keep playing. And it's so much more fun because of it.
Yeah, I was going for the... Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going for the feeling like... The it's not a rhythm based game traditionally where you try to match the beat. It's more of I don't know if you play Saints Row, but you remember that scene in Saints Row where you jump out the plane and the Kanye West music starts playing. You're like, man, this feels good. Like that whole gameplay sequence wouldn't be good without that Kanye track on it. So I try to do that, but multiple times.
All right. Steven?
Oh, I thought you were gonna say something there.
I was, but I don't know if you want to segue off the music thing, or I could go into a whole other thing altogether. It's entirely up to you.
I mean, you're kind of answering this question that we got in our mailbag, but I would like to get a specific example from you of maybe something in the game. So we had a question from Dr. Mike. He asks, what real world influences inspired the art style? So maybe there's something from the real world, you know, in your life or something like that. Maybe not from pop culture, but maybe just from the world around you, maybe a specific example. I feel like you've answered this, but I don't know, maybe not.
It's a mix of everything. Detroit, the feeling of things more than actual things, you know. Like the main character, it was based off of a lot of like famous Black people. Like his whole like style comes from, you know, Eddie Murphy and Beverly Hills Cop. But you know, the way he generally looks was based off of my uncle. And then I mixed in like a little bit of anime. So his hairstyle came from this character in this anime that I like. So it's like I pull stuff from everywhere. Like there's parts of the environment of the city that I've literally taken pictures of Detroit, and I'm like, hey, I want like that kind of building. Let me model that real quick. and I'll try to get that in like a day. And so it's really a mixture. There's nothing specific. It's just, you know, you draw from your own life as much as you can, but mm-hmm. a lot of stuff is subconscious.
Now, I do want to say that this game is a good reminder for us, Steven, to always reach out to game publishers. because typically we reach out to game devs, we see a trailer, that looks cool, let's reach out, mm-hmm. get them on the show, and then, you know, right. they can block us forever because they hate us so much. but I spoke to Head Up Games a while back, not too long, but recently, in the recent past. And while going through their catalog of games, I discovered yours. So talk about that relationship. And you mentioned before we started recording the Gamescom trailer, how they came together very quickly for you. So discuss that whole dynamic between both you and Head Up Games.
Yeah, it happened really, really fast. It was I was basically just working on the game by myself. You know, the game was a lot smaller in scope. It's just me. I didn't have any money. I made the game for free. Well, not for free, but you know,
right.
whatever.
On your own dime.
Yeah. On my own dime, which was nothing. I didn't spend any money on it. I got into this showcase, and Head Up saw the game at the showcase. So it was much like, it was like an interview. I was talking to a couple people and they were playing the game and doing very badly at it, and we were just making jokes and stuff. And then, you know, the head of Head Up sent me the perfect email. He said, I seen your game, this is what you have, but this is like where you got your inspiration and this is what you're going for. Like, he nailed exactly everything that, wow. you know, I had in my mind, because I wasn't really at the time looking for a publisher or, you know, trying to, you know, go down that route. But that email was so good. I was like, what do you want? And then he told me the whole pitch. He was like, hey, we want to support you. We just want to help you finish your game and bring it to as many things as we can bring it to. And I was like, that sounds amazing. I'm in. So after a couple months, we, you know, figured out all the paperwork stuff, or after a couple of weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And once that was settled, they was like, hey, we need a Gamescom trailer like next week. So I spent 5 days getting the game into a good enough state for me to record it at, wow. in a 4K quality. And then I spent one day putting together the trailer. I cut up my friend Dan, he cut up the song for me, like, to be, you know, the size of a trailer in about a day or in about a couple hours. And then I spent the rest of the day just cutting the actual visuals to that song, and then sending it to them. It was like, good enough, right? And they was like, yeah, you know, I had to change some legal stuff at the end, but yeah, it was basically just 24 hours I had to make that trailer.
It's amazing. It seems like it's almost like a double-edged sword. Like, you know the style of the game, you know what you're going for, and then all of a sudden you have to do something very, very quickly and very abridged. You have to show exactly what's so amazing about your game. You have to show exactly all the hard work that you put into it, and you want to show it to the world, and you have 1 minute. You have, or whatever it is, 30 seconds, however long the trailer was. You have basically a minute to show everybody that. How difficult was that for you to like cut that down to show exactly what you want to show them?
It was pretty difficult, but the hardest part was not lying, because it's really easy to make the game look better than it actually is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's not a knock against anybody else, because a lot of people, you know, tweak some things and make their game look really good, right. with the full intention of putting it out that way. But then, hardware gets, you know, whatever, and they have to downgrade a little bit. So mm-hmm. yeah, definitely not a knock against anybody. But me, I was intentionally trying to pull back on some things to not overpromise. Because one thing I definitely don't do is like tell people things I can't do. That's why I make the note about my animation. Whenever someone says your animation is amazing, I'm like, thank you. But I got to set expectations for people to be like, yeah, this is one guy. He did all of this. So,
and that's about it. And that's all you're getting.
But I think that's part of it. It's like, knowing that going in, it's only one person. That's the beauty of it. If it was like a team of 50 developers with a huge budget, you could say, you all can't do better than this. There's 50 of you going on here. But knowing it's driven by a single person with a single vision, again, it speaks volumes to your talent. And right. I think that's why Head Up was like, sign this guy on. Get that trailer in one day or you're fired.
Yeah, but Heads Up is super dope. They, I had a couple publishers reach out to me, you know, while talking to them. Heads Up, my number one pick every time.
Yeah, like you can't, like, I feel like this was like at a time where these stylized games were kind of being showcased a lot more in the limelight. Like Andy had mentioned, Ape Out, also Hotline Miami comes to mind, of that, you know, very visceral, very in and out stylized, beautiful movement and kind of just trial and error type gameplay. And like those games started to really come around more recently in the last maybe like 3 or 4 years. So Head Up having their ears to the pavement, as it were, is pretty cool on them. And really not surprising, because if you do look at their catalog, they really do look for these things and they look for unique relationships, and they've been doing a damn good job.
Yeah, they're really good at making picks. I like it a lot.
What's it been like working with the next gen hardware for you, PS5 and the Series X, as a, from a developer standpoint?
Cool.
For our audio listeners, yes. Neil was shaking his head no, and then said cool, as if he was holding back some information.
I'm surprised. We will prod say now. Dope. Can you expound on that?
The game is coming to consoles and PC.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
It is a video game that you can play with a controller.
It is a video game, and it's coming out on things.
It's a game I'm making.
Yep, and it is super dope. We are making more announcements in the upcoming weeks. Check out my Twitter, where I'll be announcing all the dopeness.
That's great, because I was actually just going to segue to that. I want you to tell people where they could follow everything, because we're going to get into rapid-fire questions in a few minutes.
That's at the end. Tell us when. Q1's a window.
It's Q1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, look, 8, 9, 10.
All right. I feel like everybody in the game industry has to take Q1 as like a bendable like window. Like, just because of what's going on right now. My game's coming out Q1. We're gonna bend that so that time frame just a little bit. So
I feel like anytime a publisher or a developer says Q and any number after that, it's, wouldn't it be great if it came out Q1? Like that's like, I feel like that's the part of the sentence that's fine. Like, I
just put Q1 question mark.
I will say that, like, not to go back to the cyberpunk stuff, but sure. Whenever you give a date, like, people freak out if you don't meet that date. Like, yes. So bad.
How have we not learned this about human beings yet?
That's why publishers and, like, individuals are terrified of dates. Like, even me, because I can say for, like, a certain date right now, and it is 100% plausible that something pops up in the game tomorrow that pushes that date back by a month. Mm-hmm.
Or in your life, you're one person.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, literally I could anything. Die. Who knows? Like, they'd be like, the one guy making the game died, so we're not gonna hit this date, and there will still be people mad about it.
What do you mean? Get somebody. You're a big publisher. Figure it out. Get somebody on that.
The internet is crazy. So, like, I feel like there's no compassion for game devs. It's just like, I want my thing. I want it now. If you don't give it to me right when you said you were going to give it to me, then you did this on purpose.
Well, they're entitled. That's what that's all it boils down to. They think, I'm giving you the money for this, and I want it now. Give it to me now.
Well, I mean, yes, it's the entitled gamers, but also the people feeding them the information and stoking the flame sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
No one specifically. It's just I feel like a problem we have in the game industry, where the bad news is the best news to talk about.
Yeah, we had that issue, Andy, where we were like, okay, here's what's going to happen. Next gen's going to come. Here are the two games we're going to play right away. And then Cyberpunk's coming out. And then we're going to dedicate the next 2 weeks to Cyberpunk. And it was like, hey, guess what? Cyberpunk is delayed until December 10th. And we were like, well, that fucking throws our coverage out of whack. Okay, now what? Okay, we're gonna do this. And then Andy was like, I'm not gonna play it. I'm not gonna play it until next gen version is out because I don't trust it. And guess what? You were right. Anyway, I feel like human beings, like especially in America, should be a little bit more used to dates not happening. Because like even when you make an appointment at the doctor's office, you're there for 4 hours long after your appointment. I just feel like there's something we should just figure out.
We can't get a USPS window properly.
No,
or a cable guy to come on this time frame.
Never. Not even once. You know who's good at that though? Amazon, the groceries. They're like, here's your window. It is between 1 and 4, and they will either come at 1:01 or 3:59. They will be there, no matter what. Anyway, let us get into our rapid fire section of the podcast. This is where we get to know you a little bit. This is where you get to drop your guard. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we're gonna ask you
always up.
We're gonna
never drop.
Ask we'll you see some about that. Rapid we'll fire see. Questions. I'm going to hit you up with the first question here.
Mm-hmm.
Who would win in a fight, Miles Morales or Peter Parker?
Mm. Miles Morales, because he's black.
That's fair.
This is a very deep personal question. It'll reveal a lot about you as a human being, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Is it sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or sock, shoe, sock, shoe?
Don't wear socks. I don't go outside anymore because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. Moving on.
Smart. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Invisibility. Because if I fly around, police will shoot me.
the plot thickens, Andy.
It really does. These are all great answers. Okay. What's it like being Miyamoto's birthday twin?
Oh yeah, I saw that. You saw that. Yeah,
I did see that.
It was weird at first. I found out a couple years ago. I just posted it on Twitter randomly, but yeah, that's really cool, right?
That is really cool. You know, I once met the man at E3 in the bathroom, whilst using the urinal.
You are the third person to say that to me. Actually,
I was holding my peen, and I was like, he's Wahoo! Gonna walk out this door. It's like, I love your games.
Wait,
I can't tell you who told me that, but like there's like a famous game dev who told me that same story where he was like peeing next to him and he mm-hmm. wanted to say something but didn't want to be weird. And I was like, I made it weird.
That's what I do. I'm good at it.
if I was peeing next to Miyamoto, I would be looking down and I go, Mario. Mario?
That's when they call security
with the acoustics of a nice marble bathroom. Oh man, that's totally what I would do. whose turn is it? Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
It is my turn. Okay, keyblade or gunblade?
Gunblade. A keyblade is stupid. It wouldn't actually work.
That is the only answer to that question.
It is. You're right.
That's the most Disney thing I ever saw.
It's also like the Indiana Jones thing. Hit or shoot him from afar with the gunblade.
Yeah. Right.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No. What?
Soulmates. Soulmates, Neil. Right here.
Wings, boneless or bone in?
Mm. Bone in.
Mm.
What are like the dating dumbest questions?
What is the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
I don't injure myself. I sit in front of a computer all day making games. y'all don't understand. I don't go outside. I don't get to leave anymore. All of my interviews, I've done a lot of interviews. All of them look the same. I'm wearing the same sweater. Nothing in the back.
I mean, you were a child at some point. You did go outside before all of this.
Wait, is this real?
You had to have hurt yourself at some point in your life.
Is it a pre-recorded message?
I plead the fifth.
Okay. All right.
Black Mirror.
What is a skill you wish you had?
A skill? I mean, I'm really good at everything.
Snap.
Humble.
I wish I could eat pizza with pineapples on it because clearly people want that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You people, hold on a second. Hold on a second. I'm Italian, okay? I don't want pineapple on pizza, but I'm also a fat guy. So I don't mind if pizza is the option and you say, well, it's got pineapple on it. I'm not going to go,
I'm not going to eat pineapple on their pizza.
Let's just say, if you gave me pineapple in one plate and pizza in the other and you said, here you go, eat it. I'm 100% putting that pineapple on top of the pizza to make the food disappear quicker.
Hello, 911.
What's your emergency?
You know what's an interesting way to eat food? You get a glass of milk and then you pour your cereal without the milk in it. And you like eat a spoonful of cereal and then you drink your milk. It's a really interesting way to eat cereal.
Is that how you eat it?
Now.
Yeah. That's called a deconstructed cereal. Deconstructed breakfast cereal.
I thought that the sock thing would see if you were a sociopath, but I think that lays it out to me a little bit.
Indeed.
I can't hurt anybody. I don't get to leave. See?
No, this is very true.
As long as they don't come in here, then they're safe.
Is it my turn?
I don't know. Just go.
Y'all wanted this.
What is a childhood mystery that you solved years later?
There's been a few that came up and I was like, that's why they call it that. But I just can't think of like that specific case. People laughed at me a lot for that. Childhood mystery that I solved recently.
Or like when you were older. Like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
We gotta come back to that one. I have to think about that one.
What is the worst anime you've watched the entire series of?
I just watched a couple that I made it to the end and I was like, that was bad. I think the most recent one, I know a lot of people like Beastars, but I really didn't like Beastars. I watched the whole thing and was like, oh, this is just like porn without the cool parts.
It's like, what is this furry propaganda I'm watching right now on the TV?
Right? It was just like, I was into it at certain parts. So I was like, oh, that's cool. But then, it just confused me. I gave up on Fire Force. That was a really cool show up until it. No, it wasn't Fire Force. Black Clover. I gave up on Black Clover. I stuck with it for like 100 episodes, and then I was like, man.
100 episodes? That's a time commitment, man.
It's nothing if you watch fucking Naruto or Bleach. It's like a nothing. That's like a blink of an eye, 100 episodes. You could do it in your sleep.
I think my favorite anime is SAO, though. I know people don't like that, but it's about like the first episode is the perfect first episode.
I'm not familiar, but
you know, it has to be
Sword Art.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know the franchise. I've never seen it, though.
What word best describes you when you're drunk?
I don't drink. I never had a sip.
I could have called that.
Yeah.
So quick. So quick.
I got a sense.
Let's think. We'll do a couple of more. You have a blank piece of paper in front of you, and your standard sixteen crayon Crayola box. What's the first color you're grabbing out of your Crayola box on your blank piece of paper?
That is the weirdest question anyone's ever asked me in my life. I mean, I've had some terrible questions before, but man, who asked a question? What do you hope to gain from that question?
I don't know.
Saying black and just sounding racist or saying white and sounding
racist. Well, I always go for black because I like to outline things in black.
Some groups, like I'm either picking black or white, and some groups going to be mad at me. When you say white and then black people mad at me, I'm going to say black and white.
I mean, you have brown, you got gray, you got yellow, you got orange, you probably got some red in there, you got blue.
What you going to draw was just like a yellow crayon.
The sun, a beautiful, brilliant
sun. A beautiful sun, and then that little house, and then you make the little path from the house to a bunch of trees and hills.
Yeah, a little smoke from the chimney.
Right, a little smoke from the chimney.
And there's mountains somehow in the background.
Your checkmark birds that are flying in the sky. You have options here, Neil. You have options. And you went.
Man, I feel like this is a setup. I feel like someone's going to hold this against me and be like, yeah, Neil, with your blue crayon.
He had 32 options, and he chose black.
Right?
Shit.
I'm going to say blue. I like blue a lot.
No, blue's dope.
Blue is a good color. It's a great color.
What colors you guys picking? Yeah.
I said I always go black because I like to outline my drawings in black. So I start with the outline because I'm also like a six-year-old in my art style. So everything looks like a coloring book when I'm doing it.
I think I'd grab a red first. That's what I would do. I was drawn to the color red. All right.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It inspires creativity and madness. All right.
In the blood of your enemies, I guess.
Yes. Who is your favorite cartoon character and why?
Win.
Ah. Fascinating. Okay.
Huh?
That was a question. I'm asking.
He said when.
Oh, when?
Yeah.
What do you mean when?
Like now or when?
Your whole life of ever, of all time.
Oh, I mean, that's a big question.
It is. We ask the big rapid-fire questions around here. This is Dual Screens Podcast.
Yeah,
this
isn't how to respond to
this. This isn't
when?
No cosmopolitan quiz.
Like, there's no time frame on that.
When I was a kid, it was like Ash Ketchum. When I was like a teenager, probably like Huey from like Boondocks.
Huey's dope.
Yeah, Huey is dope.
That should be many people's spirit animal right there.
Man, I would have said Cleveland from the Cleveland show, but then I found out, you know, he's voiced by a white guy, and that just killed the character for me.
God.
Man, it was disappointing because I was like, look at that black man on TV, and this took everything from me. I would probably say Young Midoriya. I know that's anime and that's not a cartoon, but
it's still a cartoon. It's in the same, there's a Venn diagram. It all fits in.
I loved the Cleveland show.
Yeah, the internet going to yell at Shaw for that. I'm clearly saying that cartoons aren't anime, so don't yell at me.
It's
there's an overlap. It is what it is. I'll allow it.
Drawn characters, whatever. One of my favorite moments in the Cleveland show. It's really probably the only moment that stuck with me forever, and it was he's yelling at everybody at the table, and then he sits down. And then he just yells, "Ass out of my nuts!" And I just thought that was the funniest. I had that DVR'd forever, and I would just rewind to this part where he's yelling at his kids.
The literal low hanging fruit is what you went for.
I just thought it was the funniest shit. Oh my god, I have no idea.
When he was like Frat Friday, I got frat. That was my favorite.
God, I love. I'm so sad that show is off the air. Seth MacFarlane, you know.
Well, wasn't his choice. I'm sure he will want all his shows playing all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, Andy. Why don't we let's see. What do we got? Are there any of the usuals? Yes. I'll do mine, and then you'll do the final question.
The final.
Okay. That's question: scary. Is cereal a soup?
It's a snack.
Not the way Neil eats it.
You're right. Cereal is a snack. Mm. It's not a soup.
Okay.
Again, fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I love how your mind works, Neil. It's
like
very intricate.
Like an onion.
People eat, like, I don't understand why people only eat cereal in the morning. Like, that is definitely afternoon.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a dinner.
You know, when you're hungry, like at 10 o'clock at night, you're watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have it for dessert instead in lieu of an ice cream bowl, like a bowl of ice cream. I'll just say, no, Fruity Pebble me.
That just is like cake in a bowl, essentially. It's all sugar.
I love Fruity Pebbles, you guys. I love Fruity Pebbles.
I mean, it's just liquid and like some little snacky, you know, things. Sure. Like it's kind of like a drink and pop and eating a bag of chips to me. Mm-hmm. But sure. Healthier.
Slightly. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Andy.
All right, Neil. This is the ultimate, the final showdown.
That's it.
The OK Corral. This mm-hmm. is it. This mm-hmm. will determine your fate in life. All the things rest on this answer. So think carefully and think wisely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're ready.
Think Cake. Wisely, he said.
Yes.
Cake. That's my answer. Whatever you're about to ask. Okay.
Now, I must say, as a preface to this question,
mm-hmm.
no, you cannot plead the fifth on this one.
Oh.
So I'm just going to get ahead of you on this.
Like true Americans, we're taking those rights away.
I sense it. But listen, if you feel uncomfortable, then again.
That was the right thing to say at all, Steven.
Then again, I must say, like your game says, you will never yield. So don't yield to this question.
No my yielding.
No that yielding allowed.
My game doesn't say that. Okay. Right.
It's in the title.
It says never yield. It doesn't say you can't.
It's a suggestion, Andy.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeez. See how presumptuous he is?
It's true. Well, it was my interpretation. And I think, as to our chat before,
as
all the answers are right. As long as it's a better answer than Neil's. All right. So the final question is, Neil, it's a mm-hmm. choice. And that choice is Andy or Steven?
Uh-huh.
Does what?
No.
That's your choice.
That's your choice.
Column A or column B?
Oh, I don't care. A is the first letter in the alphabet, Andy.
I'll take it.
That's probably the safest response we've gotten.
It is.
We've gotten people that weaseled out of it and said, "Oh, both."
You're
both terrible.
Oh no! If you
I hate
me
you,
who
I hate you both equally. So
if you ask me who I like better, Steven, hands down, easy.
Oh, I love it. Oh,
if you ask me who looks better,
there's only one answer. There's only
you
one
know
answer.
What? You know what? I will take that. Mm-hmm. So
if you ask me who's cooler. You both are terrible.
He's got a point. I like you. Finish your game so you can come start a new one so you can come back on the show.
Right.
I like it. I like it. Q1. Q1.
Only if I make all the monies. If I don't make any monies, it's your fault. And,
I mean,
you know.
You could certainly get like a 12-footer, like a 12-foot yacht, I'm sure, on the sale of this of Never Yield. Probably.
Man, y'all don't know anything about black people.
I didn't say you're going to buy a way out. Yeah. I'm saying you would have enough to buy a 12-footer. I mean, you could keep that shit on the dirt. I don't care what you do with it. I'm just saying.
Even on the dirt. Let me tell you about the history of black people in boats.
No. Abort.
But here's the thing, Neil. You don't know this. That by coming on this podcast, you have guaranteed yourself 1.2 sales units of your game.
That is true. One point two. At the least, that's just from our Discord. We have realized that of our most staunch Discord people, 1.2
of them will buy
every game from every guest we've had. So we're
nice.
We're
so one of your moms is going to buy my game.
Oh, I wish my mom was
for us.
As a really bad birthday present.
I've heard you liked this game. We were just being nice, Mom, but thank you.
Right.
I think we just bolstered the sales of No More Heroes more than anything else on the show.
Into the Spider-Verse will be watched tonight with a bowl of cereal. folks, that is going to bring us to the end of the show. I want to thank Neil again. Thank you so much for coming on the show. That was fantastic. Andy, thank you for doing this with me as always. And I'm happy to be back and doing this with you because this was a lot of fun. Folks, thank you so much for listening to the show today. We'll be back at it again next week with another Indie Dev guest. Andy, would you like to share with our listeners what's on tap for next
week? But there's like five I have to email back. Just to confirm a date and time with.
No one's
coming on the show after this.
It's a surprise.
Oh, no, Neil. We will find someone to come on the show.
Neil, you don't understand. He's interviewed hentai developers before.
Oh, wow.
There is
I should have did more research.
There is no
No bottom.
Bottom to where we would go to make sure that we are telling stories on this podcast.
Listen, I'm all about supporting diverse voices on this podcast.
That's right.
The anti community. Right.
We believe in that.
Cannot be ignored.
Without conviction, what do you have? You know what I mean?
But it looks like, in a more serious tone, we're having either Super Meat Boy coming on next week or Cyber Shadow.
So awesome. Awesome.
Two good games.
Great ones. Yep.
One will happen next week.
You're having those games come on the show, or you're having the people who made them?
Yes, the developers of those games.
Team
One of
Meat.
Those two.
That's, I don't
Team
know.
Team Meat or Yacht Club games.
Yacht Club. Sure. Yeah.
We love the Yacht Club. Good people.
That's dope. Make sure you tell them about me so they can give me the monies.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
So you cannot buy a yacht.
So I can, yes, I'm not buying a yacht.
What is the opposite thing of a yacht that you would buy? What is the equivalent of a yacht, but without all the pain and suffering?
Pineapple pizza.
Oof.
That's all pain.
I hope you get more money than that. Folks, if you want to follow us on social media, we are at @duel_screens on Twitter. We are at NDS Podcast on Instagram. I'm at Batchild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS Podcast. And again, if you want to join our Discord, you do have to be a Patreon supporter. It is a part of your VIP perks for as little as $1. So again, that's patreon.com/NDS podcast. Neil, tell everybody where they could follow you, follow the game, follow the progress, and all that fun stuff.
Cool. You can just Google Ariel_Knight. This underscore is very important because people try to use my name for a lot of other stuff. So Ariel_Knight on Twitter. That's where I post all my updates. We're going to have some announcements coming up real soon. I don't know. I don't say dates until I'm 100% sure. So just follow me. And you'll find out real soon.
Well, we're very excited for this. Thank you so much for doing this. This was an awesome show. You're an awesome dude. Keep in touch and good luck with everything. That's it, folks. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Neil. And as always, please be excellent to each other.